The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What's up, fellow addicts? This is Shannon, the producer of the SDR show. I am super excited to be able to introduce today's episode because today's guest is one of my favorite musicians in the whole wide world. And so joining Ralph Sutton and James Madden today is singer-songwriter Edwin McCain. You all most likely know him from singing the song I'll Be from, I would say, like the early-ish 2000s-ish. But it's a really fun interview. He gets through the whole interview while still battling the coronavirus. He even sings a little bit of a song at the end, which made me so excited. But we hear about how he did some things that may or may not be legal, which actually got I'll Be to get played on the air for the very first time. We get to hear how Darius Rucker of Hootie and the Blowfish helped him to actually get signed in the first place. Lots of fun stories. He predicts where James Madden's life is going to go. It's a really, really fun episode, but listen all the way till the end, and then you can hear me embarrass myself and be a super fangirl and probably make Edwin McCain regret coming on the show, but it's a really fun episode. So I hope that you enjoy it. Remember, we do the show live every single Wednesday and Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern at gasdigitalnetwork.com/live. That is absolutely for free, but the best way to support the show is to go to gasdigitalnetwork.com, use promo code SDR. That will give you a 1 week free trial, which gives you access to every single episode of this show that we have ever done, as well as every single episode of every show on all of the Gas Digital Network. If you listen on iTunes or YouTube, make sure to rate, review, tell a friend. Every little bit of interaction helps the show to grow, and we appreciate every single one of you. Go to podcastmerch.com for t-shirts, hoodies, and mugs. And I think that's it. I'll stop yapping. Please enjoy the Edwin McCain episode of The SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the host. It's weed, I beat, it's hookers and blow. It's art, it's art. You need to know.
It is the SDR show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll show. I am still sick, but who the fuck cares? We're going to keep the show going. I'll be better eventually. James Madden in again with me to do the show. How are you, James?
Baby, I'm okay. I hope you... Well, you've been doing great with this.
I'm trying my
best. You've done a bunch of episodes. You've been a champion. You've been playing hurt like a goddamn MV. Hey, baby.
I'm trying. And also, you know, the Saturday show that comes out is always through Zoom. We do record them when we can. So when something good comes down the pipeline, I can't say, you know, I'm feeling a little under the weather. Let's not do it. It's like, no, we're going to fucking do it. So I want to say how this happened. Okay. So my producer, Shannon, who's been part of Gas Digital since day one, pretty much, I think our first employee ever, is a super fan of Edwin McCain. And in the interest of full disclosure, we have tried to get this dude on the show via normal channels for, Shannon, is it fair to say 3 or 4 years?
I would say at least. Whenever it goes around of who we would like on the show, I submit his name every single time.
Yeah, and we've tried through the regular channels, through publicity and whatever, and those fall by the wayside. And coming from radio, I've did radio for almost 20 years, I legit had feuds with bands and wouldn't play them on my old radio show because they refused to do my show, and then found out afterwards, they never knew about it. It never went past the publicist. So I don't hold ill will towards bands because I know that that happens a lot. So on our TikTok, we posted a clip with Jarrett from Bowling for Soup. And God knows how it came on Edwin's For You page, but it did. And Edwin responded to it. So then we responded to him directly and said, dude, we'd love to have you on the show. And instantly just said, here's my phone number. Let's do this. So when you responded on the show, it was late at night. Well, late for me because I've been sick. I took a screenshot of it and I just texted Shannon. I just wrote Shannon and then didn't say anything for a few seconds because I knew that would annoy her. And she wrote back, goes, what? And I sent the picture of you responding to the Bowling for Soup TikTok. And she's like, oh my God. And I say, I DM'd Reddy. We'll see what happens. So here he is right now, kind of a big deal on the TikTok. Shannon has never been so nervous. It is Edwin McCain. How are you, buddy?
I'm like you, man. This is like a tuberculosis ward today. The two of us are playing hurt. Yeah. But honestly, if you guys, I don't have a publicist, so your email probably just floated out into the ether. So if somebody didn't respond to you, please let me know who it was so I can make sure.
I'll ask. We have a guy that does the booking, so your name goes out there every couple of months. So I don't know who he's reaching out to, but he's reaching out to somebody.
I got to hear who that is because I never heard a word of it. And I'm a fan of Bowling for Soup, and I was watching a bunch of your interviews, and I was like, oh, this is a cool show.
Oh, well, cool.
And then I commented on it, and I was like, oh, this is great. I'm going to get on here. This is going to be where it's going to work out. I mean, that's you know, I honestly just went back to being independent just because I got tired of hearing this story.
Yeah, it's, you know, amazing. I mean, it is amazing. Like, so there was a band, I'm sure, look, we're about the same age. We're born 20 days apart. I was born New Year's Eve, 1969. You're born January 20th, 1970. So we're in the same age group, right? I had a radio show for 17, 18 years called The Tour Bus. It was on all over the country about 80s rock. And I know you're a big fan, Motley Crue, AC/DC, all that shit, right? So the band was Quiet Riot, and they were playing maybe 2 miles away from the studio, and they didn't want to, we were told they didn't want to do it. And I was like, fuck these guys. And we stopped playing Quiet Riot on the show for 2 years until I ran into Kevin DuBrow somewhere back when he was alive, obviously. Easier to run to him now. You just go to the graveyard. But so I was like, dude, why don't you, like, I just came out and said, why don't you want to do our show? And he's like, what are you talking about? And we started talking. He's like, no, I have never been told that about, yeah, I would do it. And then he became, over the years, became a very good friend of mine until he passed. So it was that day that I realized, oh, it doesn't go to the band 90% of the time.
I used to hang out with Kevin.
Great,
I love that guy. Dude, what a great guy. I have the best Kevin DuBrow story. So they were playing in Greenville, South Carolina, in my hometown.
Right.
Poison and Cinderella. And it was just like my dream lineup. And I'm friends with all the guys in Poison. And Kevin, and it was just like perfect. It was a perfect lineup. It was exactly the bands I wanted to see from the 80s, right? Okay. Especially Cinderella, because I don't know any of those guys, but they're awesome, right?
Awesome. Yeah, awesome.
Anyway, so after the show, we're standing out back in the lot with all the tour buses, and Kevin and I are sitting there talking. He's wearing these horrible giraffe prints spandex.
Oh, yeah, he did. He never stopped wearing those.
Those horrible things, and it looked like he had a potato in there. It was awful. Anyway, and so my wife and I are standing right there, just sitting there chit-chat with him. And these two girls sneak in the fence and come running up, and they're talking. They're trying to get an autograph from Kevin. And so it was like the five of us sitting there sort of awkwardly, these two girls, me and my wife and Kevin. And Kevin looks at these two girls that have just run up for an autograph and just straight face just looks at him and goes, hey, would one of you like to give me a blowjob?
Wow.
And one of the girls just like, without missing a beat, goes, I will. And then he goes, okay. And off they go to the tour bus.
Oh, it's awesome.
And my wife turns to me. She's like this. She starts turning to me. And I looked at her and I was like, I am so pissed. I did not know it was that easy. I wasted decades on the road, and I literally had to just pretend to be angry for an hour to get, I mean, like to just avoid that conversation, right? Like, I was like, geez, Kevin, thanks, man. You know, it was one of those classic,
it was
like, honestly, if you were like writing a parody heavy metal movie, you'd script the scene that played out.
I love it so much. By the way, so I used to date a girl that was a very attractive girl, right? And during these days of the tour bus radio show, and bands would come in and would all secretly try and get her to go on the road with them, like behind my back, like we're trying to come on to tour, whatever. Kevin came up to me one day, we're at a festival that we were there, was with him, and he goes, hey, Ralph, yeah, I'm going to go try and fuck your girlfriend. I'll see you later. And like that direct. And I was like, how could you fucking be angry at that? At least he's trying. What are you going to do?
I had a guy that was it was a guy named Francis Dunnery that was on Atlantic the same time I was, and this was, you know, way in the beginning, and I was dating this girl that was an actress that was super hot, and he came up to me after the set, and he is from England, and he goes, "Edwin, your girlfriend is bloody hotter than the fucking hottest thing I've ever seen, and if it wasn't for you, I'd give her the pasting of a lifetime."
Pasting.
And I said, "Francis," I was like, I think that's the nicest thing anybody's ever said to me. I don't even, please don't paste my girlfriend. I don't know what that means.
At least he's saying he's going to respect you. Kevin said to me, I'm going to try to fuck your girlfriend. I don't give a shit. Yes, James.
It's weird. The one time I saw Kevin DeBrow was, he used to do radio, morning radio in Vegas. And I saw him at a Walgreens. This is the opposite of what you guys are saying. He was in a Walgreens in a Tuesday afternoon buying tampons for his girlfriend. I'm like,
"Oh, that's funny. That's
rock and roll never ends, huh, baby? Yeah, never ends. Bang your head, baby."
He's a very good dude, though. I love that. Like, and I don't want to spend so much time on him. We'll talk about you as well. But so if you remember when he passed, that was during the early days of like the internet where there was all these rumors. Dora Pesch died. Lita Ford died. This one died. Yeah. That one died. And then it was Kevin DeBrow died. And I called him immediately. I said, "I just want to know that you're not dead, dude." And so I left him that message the day that he died because I didn't know. And it was really just fucking sucks. And then a really happy way to start an interview. Isn't that great, everybody?
He was going that. He was heading that way, man. I mean, he never made any bones about it. I hung out with him, and that was before I went to rehab, so I know. And I was like, "All right."
Well, he's the one that said to me when he was in Quiet Riot in the early days, he would party for 6 days and sleep for one. And nowadays, he parties for one day, he has to sleep for six. And you know, unfortunately, he still was doing that one crazy party because I think he did die of a cocaine overdose. I think that's what happened. So anyway, back to the TikTok thing, which how it started, you became kind of a big thing on TikTok. Like all of a sudden, you were doing like duets with people singing your songs. You have, I think, 10 times the amount of people on TikTok than you do on Instagram. So somehow you exploded on TikTok.
So I refused to engage social media. I was like one of those people that was like, with the 20-year-old people in our management company were like, "Seriously, you've got to engage with this or you're dead." And I was like, "Well, I'm not. So, sorry." Like, and I just refused to do it. And then my daughter got on there and, I had to go on there to like make sure, like see what she was doing. And I got sucked into the vortex of TikTok. And then I was like, "Oh, I get this." And I was like, I genuinely dig it. So it's really the only social media that I'm actually on. And then the rest of it is just like, somebody else is doing that.
Right. Someone else is doing it. Right. And I like, it's funny that you're self-aware and self-deprecating, because I saw one recently where you were looking at a wedding and filming it and saying, "We're resisting the urge." And someone wrote, "Dude, I have no idea who you are." And you just used that. It's just great. I love it.
But like what I love about it is like really watching all the Gen Xers in there. Just, ninja sneaking around ninja style in TikTok, like not really giving a shit at all. And then watching everybody else give all their shits. Everything. And it makes me cry laughing some days, just watching all the cynical Gen Xers in there, just laughing their asses off of this ridiculousness because, we're Gen X.
I'm right there with you. And as Shannon pointed out before we went live, you are doing this live from Fast Eddie's Christmas Corona Lounge. Did you use Fast Eddie for Fast Eddie Clark? Is that where you got that part? Or is that something you were always called?
My old manager that was my buddy in high school or buddy in college, when he was 25, he was a 55-year-old man. He was one of those guys that always just wanted to be an old crabby man when he was in his 20s. And so he used to call me Fast Eddie. Okay. And people would, and he was a great manager because on the phone, he sounded like some grizzly old industry veteran. And then people would meet him and go, "Who the fuck is this guy?" Like, but he used to call me Fast Eddie. And then, so when COVID hit and everybody was stuck in the house, I was like, I got to figure out something to do here. And so we came up with the idea of doing Fast Eddie's Christmas Corona Lounge, and it's just ADD theater. And, and we did that for a while. We, every episode we raised money for a different cause or whatever. And I'm just too lazy to take it down now.
And that song you did, We're All In This Together. Did you record it there or you recorded it in the studio?
Yeah, no, I recorded it onto my iPad.
Oh, wow. That's really
in
cool.
In GarageBand.
That's fucking cool.
During the pandemic, I literally made that song on my iPad in GarageBand because that was just, you know, like everybody, I was just trapped in my house. I was like, oh, this is bullshit.
And we're both sick right now while we're recording this. So I believe it was last week, it could be wrong on the dates, just a few days ago, that you performed at the Grand Ole Opry, right?
Yeah.
So now, I know, which is funny, I think the day after Vince Neil did, we talked about Motley Crue earlier, Vince went up and performed there. So because I'm an idiot, I don't know much about country music either. Explain the prestige a little bit to me, because it's not like playing Radio City or MSG. Do you have to be like invited? Like what, why the hoopla around it? Could you explain that? Like, I mean, there's that Reddit, explain it like I'm five. Can you do that for me?
We probably ought to look it up together, because to be perfectly honest with you, when Bon Jovi showed up in Nashville to be country, listen, let me preface this by saying Darius Rucker has always been country. For the 35 years I've known him, he's always been country. He just was in a band that had an electric guitar player. So that wasn't a stretch. But then when everybody started showing up to do country, you know, the question was posed to me, like, are you going country? I'm like, no, I don't listen to country music. I never have. And so I felt like, well, I don't have any place in this world. And so I never engaged it ever.
Okay.
And because I felt it would be disingenuous, right? Like, you know, I'm not going to go pretend to be something I'm not so I can make money. Forget it. You know, meanwhile, I'm fucking letting them dress me over at Atlantic and put me in video. Like, listen, I have a fine line of my whorishness. Okay. And that's where I was drawing the line. Anyway, so I didn't realize what was going on when, you know, they invited me to the opera and I was like, oh, okay, cool. And, you know, I just was like, whatever, and showing up to like any other gig. And then I get there and all of a sudden, like, I realize, this is like a big deal. And like, there's, you know, a whole camera crew and everybody's going like, you know, they're talking and every question they ask you sort of like, are you aware of how important this is? And I'm like, well, fuck, now I'm starting to you know, and like shit, I was like, I wasn't nervous until now, and now I'm getting freaked out. Like, and so as the day goes on, it's just like you all of a sudden you're like, well shit, I think my whole career is riding on this performance all of a sudden. But I will say this, it did not really land on me how important it was until I saw a quote from Hal Ketchum in there. Mm-hmm. And the reason why it was important then was Hal Ketchum was notoriously obstinate about not participating in the superfluous crap in the music business. He didn't care about award shows. He never engaged any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And because he was like, I'm not about that. I'm about music and songwriting. And it's the only reason that I do this. And all of a sudden I walk in and Hal Ketchum's got a quote in there about how important this place is for songwriting. And I was like, oh shit. Like he showed up here. Mm. And then obviously I realize how important it is in country music, but it's not just country music. It's important for the songwriting aspect, for all of the creative people that have been there and all this. And it really is. It's a special thing to be a part of.
You think that's where you got the coronavirus?
100%.
Oh man.
I think it was, I mean, I've been avoiding it for 2.5 years. So I mean, come on, it was bound.
All right, before we go any further, one of our other longtime sponsors right now, it is rockauto.com. So if you're an auto mechanic, a super cool do-it-yourself guy, or just someone who works on their own car, no more talking to counter guys who need to order parts or don't know exactly what you're looking for, or you perusing a store forever and then finding out they don't have the right size, the right make, the right this, the right that. Just go to rockauto.com. They have everything you could possibly need for your car, and you're going to have fun looking while you do it. rockauto.com. They are so confident in their pricing, they don't even have a discount code. That's how sure they are that they know their prices can't be beat. They are the one-stop shop for everything auto parts. It is rockauto.com. But when you do purchase something at rockauto.com, let them know where you heard about it. The SDR show. rockauto.com. Let's get back into it. So you mentioned Darius, who you've been friends with forever. For those that don't know, so most people call him Hootie, but yes, Darius Rucker, right? Yeah. You've known him since you were a freshman in college. And although you've told the story a lot, he's really the guy that said, all right, you're signing us, you're going to sign him also, right?
Yeah, he basically took me along for the ride with him. And who does that, first of all?
Right.
Like, you know, who does that? But he does. And then there's more to that story, too. So the deal he made with Atlantic was, I'll sing with him on his first single if you'll sign him, which, of course, they're like, OK, yeah, fine, we'll do that. Like let's start this kid development deal, whatever. And so when he was supposed to come out and fly out to L.A. to sing on the record, his daughter had just been born. And I called him and said, look, dude, you just had a baby. Forget it. I'll sing. We'll do the best we can do. It's no big deal. Like I'll deal with Atlantic. You stay home and be with your family. And he said, nope. I said, wow. I said, I'm going to be there. And he got on a freaking airplane and flew to LA and sang on the first single. Like that's
fucking cool. That's a
ride or die, bro.
Wow.
And dude, he's so ride or die. But here's the thing. He's never changed a bit.
That's
and
cool.
And he's never taken it too seriously. And I say this too, if I hadn't been around him early in my career, I would happily have gone full David Lee Roth. Like I don't have the not take it too seriously gene. I take everything too goddamn seriously. And if I hadn't been with him to learn how to not take it too seriously, I would have gone straight into diamond David Lee Roth territory as quickly as possible. Like
right now, we'd be having this conversation and you'd be wearing the same pants that Kevin Dubrow was wearing.
100% believe that. I would have blown the entire budget on confetti cannons, and I'm not shitting you.
Fucking great. And though you talk about you mentioned it earlier, and how you have like a defiant streak in you.
Terrible.
You talked about how at festivals and stuff, when even though you were just going up to play two songs, you're like, "Fuck this, we're not playing the tracks. We'll roll out all of our fucking equipment." You know, just crazy shit like that, because that is in your defiant personality.
They fucking hated us. Like we were playing like Shania Twain and Backstreet Boys. Like we would be sandwiched between bands. And all you gotta do, nobody gives a fuck. Just go up there and lip sync along with your stupid song. They just want to see what you look like. They want to see your stupid face. And then but we were under the impression that shit mattered for some reason, and we would literally kill ourselves pushing B3 organs, and the production companies for these shows just hated our guts. Just like, Jesus Christ, you rednecks, you know. but you gotta remember, so our start, when we started out, we were a jam band. Like I was on tour with Bob Weir and the Allman.
Wow.
We did cool. 2 summers with the Allman Brothers. Like we were a jam band. And we had a big jam band following, like a String Cheese Incident used to open for us.
Oh, wow.
And
we were
like a big jammy band. And then we had a radio hit. And guess what? You're not a jam band anymore. And they don't give a shit about you. You're officially persona non grata in that world as soon as you've somehow crossed the evil empire. And all you got to do is ask Blues Traveler about that. Yeah. And it's such an interesting dynamic, because in that jam band world, everything else is okay.
Meaning
except commercial success. except radio commercial success, because you can sell fuck tons of tickets and be a commercial success. But if you have the radio success, you're done.
But nowadays that quantifier can't exist, because radio success, what the fuck does that mean? Does it mean, you know, it doesn't mean anything.
Don't exist.
It doesn't mean anything. So that's part of the reason why I'm so fascinated with TikTok. And we've started bringing artists from TikTok to open for us, because I'm always been a big fan of the stewardship component of this. Any successful career, if you don't have a stewardship component, you're doing it wrong, right? Because Bob Weir took care of us, like Warren Haynes and Greg Allman. Like, in between the Allman Brothers tours, Greg would take me out with his band. I mean, if you're not helping the next generation, you're doing this wrong, right?
I was just talking to someone about how important that used to be as a fan. I forgot who we were interviewing, but I was saying how you would want to see, well, who were the Stones taking out on tour? Who was Motley Crue taking out on tour? And you'd go buy that record because you're like, well, if they endorsed them, that's somebody I want to look up. I don't know if that really fucking matters anymore. I don't think it does.
Well, I know our crowd is super, super loyal. So if we bring somebody out with us, the next time they come into town, our crowd is there. Mm-hmm. Right. So it does exist with our crowd. But again, my crowd is pretty much me. So it's a bunch of Gen Xers. But, you know, the smartest thing I've done in the last 10 years, I moved my show times to 7 p.m.
I read that. I love that. It's so genius. I would be so happy because it's over at 9.
I got guys my age coming up to me after shows, like high-fiving, like, dude, 7 p.m.? Yes! I'm home. I'm in bed by 9:30. Dude, we sell out. It sells out. Guys I've done business with for years, and they're like, dude, we're not doing your show time at 7. And I'm like, look, I'll buy every unsold ticket.
All right. That's smart. By the way, like, James did a comedy release record not that long ago, and it was like at 11 o'clock at night. I'm like, dude, I'm not fucking coming to an 11 o'clock show. I'm not doing it.
Well, that's the question I want to ask. So you guys are like, what, 8 years older than me? I'm 44. Is this going to happen? I'm a late night. Like, last week in Montreal, I had a 7 o'clock show. I spent the rest of the night climbing the walls. I'm like, this is how I'm going to function. I'm going to be up till 4 in the morning and be done at 8:30.
I mean, tell me, my uncle.
Can I tell him his future?
Yeah. Yes.
Please. Oh my God.
Oh my God. And I love your face when doing it. First of all, Edwin, you're the greatest person I've ever met. I'm loving this so goddamn much. I want you in my life. Go.
Listen. This is like, very soon, if this hasn't already happened, you will chase down some teenagers that went by your house too fast in your neighborhood. And you will you'll get up to them and you won't really have planned what you're going to say, but your fucking mouth is going to open. And this ocean of bullshit adult script is going to fly out, and even you're going to be shocked. And then you and the teenager are going to sit there and look at each other going, like, what is happening right now? Then about a week later, you will realize somewhere around 4 o'clock in the afternoon that you have not thought about sex the entire fucking day.
Jesus. Okay.
And you will know a peace that only the Japanese have a word for. And then in that moment, you will feel superior to every other human being you meet from then on. And you'll be so superior that you'll give yourself permission to go the fuck to bed at 7 and be pissed as fuck that somebody dared call you at 9 p.m.
Oh my God. Edwin, what's crazy is part one, I think, happened last night. I'm hosting at the Comedy Cellar and the bar room, and two comics in their 20s are yapping in front of audience members going blah, blah, blah. And I go, shh. I did it 3 times. I then physically grabbed one of the guys and pushed him. And it was his ex-girlfriend in front of his ex-girlfriend. I should have gotten punched for that. And I physically grabbed him and moved him away from the audience and then went outside and talked shit about those motherfuckers. I'm like, these goddamn kids ruining the show. Fuck them.
Did you say get off my lawn at any point?
I told him to get a job. I told him to get a fucking job, which is what my grandfather who raised me for years told me. He's probably in heaven if it exists. Still get a job, asshole. Joe business ain't shit.
And you know what? You're not doing it right unless you do this, because they're idiots. They're fucking idiots, and they have to be told.
They gotta get their shit together, Ed. When it's bullshit, it's bullshit. All yapping. Blah, 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 blah. You're gonna be on stage soon, dick face.
To circle now back, I'm worked up, Edwin. You said where you wanted to play your instruments, right? And no matter what, you wouldn't do tracks, right? I saw you say something that really made me laugh, that you wanted to put out a series called Douchey Things I Did in My 20s. And one of them being that you went up on stage in New Jersey to sing karaoke to your own song, but nobody recognized it was you.
It was in the airport. And it was somewhere, it was like an airport bar or something. Somebody dared me to do it. And back then, like if we weren't playing shows, I was drinking. And there was literally nothing I wouldn't do. Like don't dare me to do anything, because I would absolutely do it. And thank God, every time I write a gratitude list, top five is thank God there weren't camera phones back then. I mean, oh God. Anyway, so I went up, I went into the bar and I was all hungover and I sang the song, and this dude comes up and he goes, "Well, I'm not really as good as the original guy, but I guess I was all right."
I love it. Idiot. Also, but going back to your defiant streak, you refused to change the lyric to "I'll Be Love Suicide" in "I'll Be." And that, because of that, you now have a tour bus, thanks to Hillary Duff.
Right. So, so apparently that movie, they went in and just made this big edit in the song. They didn't ask me. They just cut it out of there and then threw it on a CD. And I was like, you can't do that. You're not allowed to do that. But there's a karmic part to this story. I had been fucked over by this publishing company, like to the tune of $1 million. Like, wow. They reneged on $1 million deal, and it was basically pound sand, fathead, because you know you're never getting this. And I just had to eat it. And turned out it was the same people.
Oh well, that's good. That feels good then.
It came back around, and you know the attorney's like, how aggressively do you want me to pursue this? I was like, I don't know, Genghis Khan, do your thing. And I remember I got a call from one of the people that was involved on the other side. You know, he called me, and which was so surprising. And it was like that standard industry call. I'll make sure you never work in this business again. And I said, I don't work in it now. throw me under the bus. I don't care, dude.
Yeah, that's fucking great.
Yeah. And so it actually ended up, it was kind of like that Seinfeld. It'll even out. It evened itself out. The universe evened itself
out. So the thing I like that, I don't know how you could put this lesson towards a lot. I mean, we've talked about, you know, 80s rock bands, but a lot of bands that had one or two or three huge hits.
Right.
Some of them will go to the point where they don't even want to perform that song live anymore. Right.
Yeah.
There's a band that I could, that would even, like when they put out a new album, use Iron Maiden as an example. When they put out a new record, they do a tour alternating years. One year will be the hits. 1 year will be the entire new album, and then maybe the Trooper, right? If you're lucky at the end. And so you seem to be, you used a great analysis about a lottery ticket, but you seem to be able to be totally at peace with the fact that this is what people want to see. And I don't know how you get that lesson to all the other bands out there.
Well, it's the stupidest thing, because first of all, like, how lucky am I to have one song on the radio, much less three?
Right.
And then one of them becomes this juggernaut that, I mean, it defies description. It's 25 years old, and J-Lo just used it again as the centerpiece in a movie. Like, you can't. So everybody's like, why aren't you putting out a new single? Well, why would I ever do that? Like, this song is still doing, like, am I going to go into a radio station and go, hey, man, you know, this song's been working for you for 25 years. Let's take that off and try this new thing I got. Like, that's idiotic. Like, that's the dumbest thing. And so, but the other part is, listen, I'm a fan, and I've seen AC/DC 10 times. And every time I go see them, I don't want to hear the new record. I want to hear Back in Black, and I want to hear For Those About to Rock. I love you guys. And look, open up with one of the new songs and maybe play another one of the new songs 3/4 of the way through, but just play the songs I love. And I'm guilty of that. So why would I be the biggest hypocrite ever to sit here and walk out in front of people and go, I'm going to play 2.5 hours of new stuff. I joke around with crowds and do that to them sometimes. But I mean, hey guys, tonight nothing but new songs, and they go,
You should put out a song called Time to Go to the Bathroom, because that's what a lot of people do. That'd be a great thing.
The first rule of show business, right? Give the people what they want,
right. But I will argue this point, because you said somewhere that you're naming a band that had a new album that people would come back to, Santana had a huge one, right, when they came back with Smooth, right? AC/DC, who, although you may have not liked that record, that Black Ice record was a fucking great record.
Good record.
Right?
That's a great record.
Johnny Cash and Cher, they all came back years later and had a huge hit. So it's not like you're going to something that's never been done. You said now, but most of your songs are about death and they're not happy songs, or, which I love, you write songs for individual people and just send it to them and nobody else hears it.
Yeah, that's my favorite thing to do. I just write songs for people and send them to them, and it's just what it is. I mean, I play some of the new stuff out live for people and do the thing, but I guess what it comes down to is there's this concept of enough, I have enough.
Right.
Like I have enough. I go play my shows and there's 500 people every night, and I don't have a label. I don't have people telling me what to do. I have my same shitty tour bus from 1999, but I know how to fix it. And I drive it and we get to where we're going, and we have the same band for 33 years.
Yeah, one guy, 33 years. I think the newest guy in the band's been there for 15 years, right? Which is crazy.
Yeah. And we all make a living. I mean, it's not anything, it's not crazy. I mean, but everybody makes an honest living. But more importantly, I answer to no one, right. What I mean? I'm home with my kids. I've got teenagers and I love being home with them. And it's the old saying, that road will always be there. Right. I got two more years with my sons and a little bit longer with my daughter before they all split. And then after they go, then maybe I'll hit the road harder again. But
I was going to ask though, because it would mean so much to our producer, Shannon, maybe you could write a custom song just for Shannon and send it to Shannon. That would make her life, I feel.
Well, that sounds like a cameo there, Ralph.
Details of Shannon, and I'll write Shannon a song.
Oh, that would make her so happy. I really would. Also,
about death, though, Shannon? Would she be all right with that? Shannon. Hey, Shannon, this is for you. You're pretty. You're wonderful. You're going to die.
That's totally fine. That's memento mori. That whole theory of you have to be reminded that you're going to die so you enjoy life. That's perfect.
Okay, yeah. Also, I know you're a big fan. So am I. I'm curious if you ever met him. Malcolm Gladwell. I've read all of his books. Have you?
I've never met him, but I wrote him an email, and he wrote me back.
I thought you were going to say you wrote him a song. God damn it. Okay, I'm sorry.
No, I wrote him an email. Dude, I'm a huge, huge fan of his work, and I wrote him an email, and he freaking wrote me back. I mean, dang, how many emails does that guy get? Right?
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, man. He's an incredible mind.
Because you talk about a lot how, and I forget, was it the Outliers book where they talk about how important timing is and how are very, very well aware of that.
100%. Like that's the part about our business is so funny, because you'll see people taking credit for the mathematically impossible alchemy that occurred in the split second and then on top of all of that, the army of nameless, faceless people at a label that work their asses off to make something happen for you. And meanwhile, all stage going, man, I did it my way. You know what I mean?
So good. Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Yeah, you also, I think that's fascinating. One of the industry legends, Jason Flom, gave you, am I right? Because he signed Skid Row to Katy Perry and everybody in between. And he gave all your stuff back to you. Is that right? Is that actually?
Yeah. So Jason and I are friends to this day. And I love him dearly. And we still do a lot of work for the Innocence Project together. And he was always, he signed me to my deal. We rode the ride together. I soured on the ride. And he, you know, he called me one day and he goes, "What are we going to do with you?" And I go, "I don't know, but it ain't here." And he just, you know, he let me out of my contract and sent me on my way. And but here's the thing about Jason Flom. Go watch the Twisted Sister documentary. Jason Flom risked his entire professional career to break Twisted Sister. And he's the kind of guy that is so, he's ride or die. He's 100% ride or die. He was like that with me. He never told me anything other than the truth. Like when I turned in I'll Be, he called me before that and he said, "Look, I just left a department head meeting. They're talking about dropping you. You got to turn, the next thing you turn in needs to be amazing. Like you're on the thinnest of ice." And like, he always told me the truth, right? It was never a moment where I didn't get the exact truth from him. And that's rare in the music industry. And we're friends to this day. And he's an astonishingly cool dude. I can't say enough nice things.
By the way, if you do watch that Twisted documentary, JJ French is wearing the t-shirt the whole time of my old radio show. He wore it on the documentary, which makes me really happy. And you said that I'll Be song was so important to break that you did things that were, quote, questionably legal, but you didn't elaborate on that. What is that actually? What'd you do that was like questionably legal to make that song a hit?
So, all right, I can say it now. I'm sure whatever statutes have run out now, but so the record company wasn't really interested in us. And so they were like, "All right, well, here's this single. We'll put it out on three stations," which is the very least they could do, like, other than throw it in the trash can. And so they put it on three stations. Two of them were in Alabama and one was in Mississippi. And so I called my manager and I said, "Look, right, this is our last shot. Well, we got to leave it all out on the field." And so we gathered all the money we had together and I sent teams of people. I got all my old college friends to go to these cities and just go around to the record stores and talk to the record store people and buy the records.
To get sound scans for it.
And then they'd ship them back to us, and then we'd sell the records on the road. So one UPC would count for two sales. So we were getting basically a two for one. And so we had this caper going for a couple of weeks, and Flom calls me up at home while we're in the middle of running this three ring circus, you know, defrauding the industry. And Flom calls me up and goes, "Jethro, you better not have your cousins buying records down in Mississippi." And I go, "Oh, like, I don't know anybody in Mississippi." And so they saw a little blip in sales, right? And so then Atlantic put the song into that Dawson's Creek show, and the sales went from 1,900 a week to 19,000, and it was on its way, right?
Oh, wow.
Right. So we artificially lit the fuse that was never going to be lit, right? I believed in the song. I knew it would do it, but it just needed a little help. And so this is the best part of the story. It was probably about six years ago. I was playing golf with Jason and we're riding it down in the cart. And I said, "Man, I got something I need to tell you." And he goes, "What?" And I said, "Remember when you accused me of buying records now?" And he goes, I knew it.
Maybe like more Fast Eddie. That's a Fast Eddie move right there. Yeah. That ain't a slow Eddie move.
I liked that it was eating at you for 25, 30 years that you had to tell him.
I was like, "Man, I hated lying to you, but man, we just had to do what we had to do, bro."
Now, I don't know who this person is, but you bring him up a lot. And apparently he was a big musician, meant a lot to you. Who is David Wilcox?
David Wilcox is this guy. He's a deep end of the pool songwriter dude from Asheville, North Carolina. And I went to see him play when I was a teenager at this little bar called McDibs in Black Mountain. And this is one dude sitting on a stool sort of working his way through life, right? Just working and working out his existence on stage. And I was like, well, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. And he was able to, in 3.5 minutes, take these complex human situations and then, you know, dial in 1,000 years of philosophy and sew it all up in a neat bow. And it was my first real introduction into true wordsmithing and songwriting, like at the highest level. And he's just one of those guys, right? And he's been around, and all the really deep into the pool songwriters know who he is. And he had a minor hit on A&M Records back in the day, but he sounded so much like James Taylor, it was kind of hard for people to differentiate. But for the hardcore folk and songwriter world, he's held in the highest regard. And he's a fabulous human being on top of all of that. And so I always acknowledge him. I've acknowledged him in so much that he's actually told me to stop, because it like it's irritating to him. But he is one of the greats. And that, you know, he's just one of those guys. And I'm sure, you know, I'm sure it's probably in the comedy world here too, right? There's always like that, you know, the outlier dark horse guy that never really got the credit, but yet was probably the catalyst of 100 great.
Oh yeah, comedy. For sure. Yeah. There's that guy that, I mean, everybody in the comedy world, Patrice O'Neill, never really got huge.
But, like Dave Attell, right? Like,
yeah, David Attell's another one. Yeah. David Attell's another one for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. They sometimes call it either a musician's musician or a comedian's comedian, you know, that kind of vibe.
Which is right.
I'm sorry. I thought you were going to say something.
No, it was just the best. Someone once goes, I don't want to offend you, but I think you're a comics comic. And I was like, thank you. It's the nicest thing anyone said to me.
No, I love my
career.
Hey, so listen, I always want to be underestimated. It's got to be terrible to be sitting there at the top going, well, now what the hell?
Yeah. I mean, Big J, who does the show with me often, he went, because he came up with Kevin Hart. And now Kevin's top of the mountain. And he said to me once, I would never want to be Kevin Hart, because there's only one direction to go when you're on the top of the mountain. You know, so he doesn't want that career. Yes, James?
There's an old sports analogy which will blow your mind, Ralph, because you're such a sports fan. But with it's easier. It's very difficult to win a championship, but it's a lot easier to win the championship than to defend the championship.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense.
We're making sense through sports, Ralph. We're going to watch a fucking inning of a baseball game soon.
So I try to do a lot of research, and I read one thing in your on IMDb that I'd love you to explain this credit. So there's a list of movie, like television and movie credits, like when you were on, I think it was Letterman or whatever. But one of them was a movie called The Last Confederate, the story of Robert Adams. Edwin McCain plays Belcher. That's all it says, Belcher.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know how this came about, but they literally dragged me onto the set of a movie. And the role I was playing, and they never really explained it. They're like, we'll figure it out. I'm supposed to play this Yankee bar owner, and they had to overdub every line because I didn't sound anything like they needed it to sound. It's like, I can only imagine this poor director and producer going, we have made the biggest mistake in the history of, yeah. So no, I was terrible at it.
That's really funny. That's
my only movie credit.
By the way, you talk about much your love of a band that was my first concert, which was Earth, Wind & Fire. One of my favorite bands of all time. I got to see them live. Did you ever get to see them live?
Not the real version.
Yeah, I got the real Maurice White, Philip Bailey. I got to see the real version of them when they had their, by the way, we talked about a comeback hit, System of Survival, which came out, I think, in like 85, maybe?
Yeah.
And it was like their big...
Don Myron was still playing saxophone. Yeah. Dude, yeah. I'm the biggest... So I've been around... I've done some of the Celebrity Pro-Am stuff, and Philip Bailey's been there.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Darius's bodyguard and I said, look, if you see me going anywhere near Philip Bailey, you tackle me and keep me away from that man. Because there is nothing but embarrassment for me if I go anywhere near that guy, because I'm the biggest Earth, Wind & Fire fan. And I don't think Maurice White gets nearly the credit that he should.
Everyone knows Philip Bailey. Not enough people know Maurice, and he passed away, unfortunately, but he does. He should get far more credit.
Well, and he was the mastermind behind, he found all those guys in the beginning. But then on top of that, like if there was no Maurice White, there would really not be a Prince. Like if you listen to Prince and you know how much Maurice White's music informed the way Prince understood music. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And when he passed, but then on top of that, meanwhile, for decades, they spread this incredibly positive message worldwide. And there's no way to understand what the ripple effect of that would be. And then Maurice White passes. And it was like, you know, everybody was like, oh, you know, I was like, there should be fucking parades all over the planet over this, right? They're like memorial. I don't know. Anyway, that's me, my fandom speaking, but I felt like he didn't get nearly the credit.
It was one of my first concerts ever. My mother took me and my brother. We saw them at Radio City Music Hall, sold out. And it's one of those concerts that I still put on as maybe one of the top five concerts I ever saw. It was unbelievable.
The Gratitude is one of the best live albums of all time.
They're phenomenal. So a couple other quick things. We don't have all day with you. This is just weird. Your uncle who got you your first guitar, he introduced you to, I'm going to fuck this up. Is it Eastern Appalachian music or something?
They call it old time music. It's sort of like a predecessor to bluegrass music. Mm-hmm. And he went to the University of North Carolina and he was studying this stuff. So it's like a living oral history of all of the people that immigrated, and most of them are Scotch Irish, right? And they're all from what Malcolm Gladwell would call a culture of honor, you know. Mm-hmm. And all of these people that populated the Appalachian Mountains, and they're tough as cobs and mostly illiterate. So all of this music is like a living history of what their lives were like, and it's pretty damn brutal, frankly. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, you think country music's sad, this stuff is like people getting thrown down wells and, you know, babies dying and people starving to death, and it's heavy shit,
right?
But
it's like your new songs that you write for people about,
right?
Death.
It's all chipper.
The song you're sending to Shannon.
Right. So but it's literally it's all rooted in some kind of truth, right? And so I think in that way, my uncle sort of set this law that music has to be rooted in some truth. It can't be fictionalized or it doesn't matter in my mind, mm-hmm. you know? And that's why it takes a long time to write a record, because I gotta live long enough to have stuff that is either true to me or that I give a shit about, or that I feel it is important enough to say, because I don't really want to, you know, get in a writer's room with three people and try to be clever. Mm-hmm. And all the songs that I think hit the hardest are have some basis in truth. And I know this is, you know, me staring into my belly button and overthinking this bullshit, but, in my experience, the songs that I love the most are the real ones. And it's, you know, Paul Westerberg. I feel like Paul Westerberg would say the exact fucking thing, you know, mm-hmm. and Alex Chilton and, you know, all those Southern California punk bands that I was fans of when I was a teenager, like, you know, Bob Mould and Husker Du and TSOL and Corrosion of Conformity, all this, they gave zero shits about anything than what was real for them and what they had to say about it. And that's what I loved about music. Like, I don't want to hear like creative people be clever. I can watch TV commercials all day long, right? I want to hear Jello Biafra tell me what he's pissed off about, right? Like, that's way more fun to me then, you know, I mean,
so that's probably got instilled in you with that, with your uncle, with that stuff. I mean, it's how 100%
where it started.
And your anti-defiant attitude came from your love of punk.
I blame all of that. I blame the dead Kennedys every day for that.
Every time I can't get it up because I drank too much, I just say, honey, it's not the liquor or me. It's Jello Biafra. Got everybody too drunk to fuck by the dead Kennedys. I want to explain the joke just in case people don't fucking get it. They think I'm crazy. I know that I already
am. Last couple of things. It's amazing how fast an hour could go. I'd love the idea that you one of your biggest hits, I could not ask for more, written by Dan Warren. A, you had no idea who the fuck she was. And B, you didn't want to record it.
I refused to record it until they paid me. Like they literally, the record company didn't know what to do. And they were like, well, what do you mean you're not going to do it? I was like, I'm not going to do it. I don't even know who she is. And they're like, you're an idiot. She's written like hundreds of hit songs. And I was like, well, good. Tell her to give it to somebody else because I don't want it. And then they were like, they were not expecting that. And so they came back and they said, well, what if we pay you to do it and we'll put it on a soundtrack? I was like, oh, well, definitely. I'll do that. I'll whore out. You didn't say it was for money. Yeah. And so they put it on a soundtrack, but then they put it out at radio. And of course, you know, and listen, I since got to like hang out with her and do whatever. And she's as punk as anybody I've ever met. Like she's a foul mouthed, hilarious. I, you know, honestly, I'm ashamed to say that I didn't know her before because I love her. She is a pirate. In the best way.
I mean, you could almost say that she's had the time of her life.
Oh my God.
Are we back to this shit, Ralph? This is what we're doing again.
But hey, but what people don't know about it is that if you do a Diane Warren song, it's almost like you get a whole nother person pushing you at radio because she literally gets on the phone and calls up program directors and cusses them out if they're not playing the song.
That's hilarious. That's pretty fucking badass.
She's serious. Like she's like the mob. It's amazing.
And then also, and then we'll ask the first, but I know that what I do like is that you've kept yourself busy. You had that short-lived show called Flipping Ships, but you also work with land management. You have like this mulching equipment group that you're a spokesperson for. You're keeping yourself in a lot of different groups and your hand in a lot of different piles.
So ever from the beginning, I've always had side hustles and my wife gives me shit all the time. She's like, you're going to give me that speech again this year about how you don't know how much longer this music business thing's going to last and how you got to get a job. And so for the entire time, I've always had some side hustle I've done.
Did you work for an antivirus software company too?
I still do.
Wow.
I do creative consulting for this company called PCmatic. But what I found out is over the years of doing this and all the private corporate stuff and meeting all the mucky mucks, like my Rolodex is vast and putting people together, business development kind of stuff is simple. And it is a skill that people need. And so I've done that. So I only let myself work three other side hustles other than music at a time. And right now I'm all stocked up with PCmatic and my dirt moving company, but I own that company. So that was a long story, but I got into grading and land clearing and wildlife development. And you know, where I live is just exploding. There's as much business you can handle. I can hire 20 people right now.
Wow. That's
and
cool.
It's been great, but it also allows me not to have to always be gone on the road and I can be home with my kids. So it's
at least for the next 2 years. And then when they're out of the house, maybe you'll go back to a full swing. I also like, by the way, how this is the truth for so many rock stars, I feel, and they just don't want to admit it. A girl said you were cute while you were playing guitar and you're like, all right, I think I'm going to do this now. I mean, and that's that's the answer for, I think, 99% of rock stars. They don't want to fucking admit it.
I mean, nobody wants to admit that, but I was at a college party in Charleston, and my dad had made, but when I left for college, he wouldn't let me take my guitar. And he said, look, I had this terrible dream. You're going to have long hair right around the country playing music and you're not taking college. And I was like, all right, fair enough, old man, whatever. And because I was playing in high school bands and shit, and, you know, just doing ridiculous shit in high school bands. And And I got to Charleston and I got to a party and there was acoustic guitar there. And I picked up and played half of a John Cougar song. And some hot girl was like, "Hey," and I was like, "Oh yeah, this is what we're doing. This is exactly what we're doing."
Right. That's really great. You're taking my, really one of my worst jokes of all time. You ready? Where do cantaloupes go in the summer? To John Cougar's melon camp.
I was going to say to Diane Warren. That's what I was going to say.
John Cougar's melon camp. All right, we got to do the first. Let's do the first right now.
The first time ever I saw concert, did drugs, had sex.
All right, the name of the show is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. We ask every guest this since the dawn of time, your first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll. What was your first concert that you went to on your own volition?
Luther Vandross.
Oh, wow. My God. I love that. That's so cool. I loved Luther.
I was 10 years old, and I went with a friend of mine that was a little bit older. And when the concert started, women started screaming, and it was so loud and so crazy. Like, I thought something terrible had happened. Like, it scared the shit out of me. I was like, "Oh," and then I realized like what was actually happening. Like, and I, you know, I remember being 10 years old. I was like, "Oh." Yeah. Great. Luther Vandross, man.
I love sure. All that's about Luther and Bill Withers and Teddy Pendergrass. I just love all. I grew up around that shit. So I love all of that stuff. So
I used to go by myself to see Roger and Zapp and the Gap Band. Roger
Troutman. I want to be your man was a Zapp Band. Right?
Oh my God, dude. Yeah. Roger Troutman walked out on stage. I was probably like 12 or 13 and Roger Troutman walked out on stage with a guitar that he had like taped a bunch of Christmas lights around. And my mind was blown. Like, I couldn't believe that was actually a thing. Like to me, that was the pinnacle of, I couldn't believe that someone was that cool.
I know. What about the first drug you ever did after weed, unless weed wasn't the first drug?
God, I'm ashamed to say it was cocaine.
Okay. Yeah. How old were you?
15.
Wow, that's pretty young,
dude. It was bit, yeah, it was I know exactly where I, you know, I remember exactly where I was too. My hometown of South Greenville, South Carolina is notoriously boozy. Like, mm-hmm. Like, as I've traveled over the years and tell people I'm from Greenville, people are like, "Yeah, man, the people there drink a lot." And I'm like, yeah. And back then I was like, "Yeah, we do." And then, you know, I was at rehab with a bunch of people from Greenville. So I was like, "Yeah, we do."
What about the first time you had sex?
Same year.
15.
Yeah.
That's young.
Oh, yeah.
I guess if everyone's drunk, it makes it easier, I guess, right?
Dude, Jesus Christ, Ralph.
In a Mustang 2, if you remember how terrible those cars were. But, you know... It lasted about 14 seconds. So it wasn't like it was, you know, it wasn't like I had enough time to get cramped up in the tiny backseat.
All right. Fair enough. Was it a one timer or did you see her again?
Oh no. She took me to her. She was older than me. So she took me to her prom.
Oh, that's nice. All right. Well, that's fun. It couldn't have been that bad. It was a really good 14 seconds if she invited you to prom.
She actually showed up at a show not that long ago.
Oh my.
And she was in the crowd and somebody said something. I looked out there. I saw her. She saw me. We both went. And that was it.
Does she know she took your cherry?
She gave me the man nod.
That's really cool. I love it. I love it so much. All right. So now you are at the Edwin McCain on TikTok and Instagram. Yeah. It's very easy to find you everywhere. Anything else you want to plug before we go around the room?
Nah, I'm good.
Okay. I would say one thing.
Well, I would say thank you to everybody that's been letting me do this for 33 years.
Well, I'm going to tell you a quick story before we do the plugs. So we had Colin Hay from Men at Work on. Love the guy, right? And in a way, in watching a lot of your videos, Shannon sent me, I don't know, 105 of your videos when she knew you were coming on. you both have similar storyteller vibes where there's great stories that are around every song that you do. It's more when I go see a show, it's more than just going to hear a guy perform. You're going for the whole thing, right? And when we had Colin Hay on, they told us he, no matter what, he won't sing. I said, okay, no problem. We asked him, I said, I see a guitar in the background, and he did 10 seconds of Down Under. So I have you on. I see two guitars behind me. I know you performed two nights ago on your Corona Lounge thing. If you could do 30 seconds of a song, anything but I'll Be, it'll make Shannon so happy.
How about this? Can you do 14 seconds in honor of your virginity?
I'll do 14 seconds in honor of losing my virginity. Oh, my God.
Come on, baby. Full circle, Shannon, baby.
It would make Shannon so happy, and I would feel remiss if I didn't do that before we do the plugs.
Let me see. Jeez. I'm trying not to. Okay, I got you.
Fucking awesome. God damn it. And with Corona. With the Rona. Oh, my God. All right, James, first of all, thank you so much. Everything about that was just awesome. Again, follow him everywhere at the Edwin McCain. James, do your plugs real quick.
Even added the cough as a tribute to you, Ralph. That was spectacular. This is great. The James Mattern on Instagram and YouTube. Go check out The Check Spot, my special / documentary, a love letter to the worst part of the comedy show where everyone pays their bills and pays no goddamn attention to the poor son of a bitch on stage, which is me. It's in black and white. There's interviews. It's innovative. The album, one album of the year last year. Pick that name up, bitches. And the special's great. Share it because we need more fucking views so I can get more money. I'll be opening for Chris DiStefano. Check out his website. I'll be in South Carolina. I'll be in Charleston December 17th.
How did you not say it that way? How do you not go, South Carolina?
He's the Chris best, baby. Great.
Yeah. All right, Shannon, your plug, Shannon.
Okay, if I may be a fangirl for one second.
Do you have
second.
Any questions, Shannon, before we wrap? Do you have any questions for him?
I have one little question about your daughter, Tiller, because during the pandemic, which I watched probably every one of the live streams that you did, and Tiller would come on.
Did you masturbate while you were watching
them? Of course not. It's a crazy question.
How can you ask that with a goddamn teddy bear in the background?
Especially since I'm asking a question about his daughter. I apologize for everything that's happening here.
You son of a bitch.
So your daughter would come on with you and sing sometimes, and she has a beautiful voice, and it seems like she has the potential to possibly follow in your footsteps. I'm just curious if she is interested in pursuing music.
I mean she was playing a little bit of flute, but she seems way more interested in soccer right now, so she's playing on two different soccer teams. But she's a ham for sure. But I'll tell you what, she's got this really dark sense of humor, and so it wouldn't surprise me if she ended up on stage at some point because she's hilarious. I mean, she literally, like, I live for embarrassing her. Like, I was And I know the principal at the school because my two idiot sons went there. And so I'm on a first name basis with this guy because of them. And the principal, I was taking her to middle school for the first time this year. And I pulled up and I saw the principal and I said, "Hey, Jordan," it's like, "this one's the good one. This is the good one." And my daughter, without making eye, did not even make eye contact with this man, walked right past him and went, "No promises," and just rolled right into the school. And I'm telling you, I died laughing. I mean, she doesn't miss. I mean, she is brutal. It's so fun.
That's great. And she's great on camera.
Yeah, she's not afraid. I mean, and she doesn't. I mean, honestly, there's the gene that refuses to accept that anything sacred. Please don't tell her anything sacred because she is absolutely going to dismantle it. And it's hilarious. It makes me so proud when she does that. Like, my favorite thing in the world is when she'll dismantle that Andrew Tate guy. Like, you know, he's this self-absorbed, proclaimed alpha male guy. And my 13-year-old daughter will just be shredding this guy. And it makes me cry laughing. I said, awesome. I know she's going to be fine. And God help whoever she ends up with.
Shannon, your plugs.
Okay. You can follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. We have all sorts of interesting guests come on, musicians, comedians, reality TV stars, and porn stars, and they tell their own personal stories about their worst date experience, a time they got into a street fight, and an experience with the paranormal.
Okay. Now, Edwin, do not even acknowledge when I ask this question until all three of us lock in. The question is, does Edwin McCain believe in ghosts? I feel like Shannon probably somehow already knows the answer.
I don't know the answer.
You don't. Okay, so I'm going to go with yes. He's this South Carolina, Southern guy. There's going to be stories that were told to him as a kid, and it seeped into his back of his brain. And yes, James, what do you say?
Oh, buddy, if you've ever been to South Carolina, I mean, I've been to bars where ghosts are pouring me fucking drinks there. It's a big yes.
All right, Shannon?
I also... I'm really split, but I feel like maybe of all of the hotels and stuff that you've been at, that there must have been a one instance that has made you at least question. So I'll also say yes.
So Edwin, what is your answer?
Yeah, you guys got me on that one. I've had some pretty freaky things occur, but I also used to eat a lot of mushrooms. So could be a residual from that. I mean, hell, we were on tour with the Allman Brothers. What do you want?
By the way, my last question, then I'll wrap up. You talk so much about how you had dyslexia as a kid and then became well-known through the fact that you could sing. Have you ever done any work for dyslexic kids? Like, you get the word out there? Have you done that?
100%. So I go and speak to this school in Greenville that's for dyslexic and ADHD kids because that's another thing about Malcolm Gladwell's book, Outliers. Like, the disproportionate number of CEOs in the country that are dyslexic. And again, that comes from the fact that you have to like force your brain to work in ways that it doesn't want to. And so you figure out how to problem solve early and think differently. It's a terrible drag when you're in elementary school, but it really does help in every other way later in life.
And by the way, if you haven't read them, which I'm sure you have, you seem like an avid reader. All the Freakonomics books are also awesome to read to get your brain to think differently if you've not read them. So I'll do my, have you done them, Matt, or have you?
You know, I've been pushing this book lately. There's a book about this guy named Sam Zamuri called The Fish That Ate the Whale. And it's a true story. And the fact that nobody's turned this into a movie is astonishing to me. It's one of the greatest goddamn stories I've ever read.
Shannon, write that down because I'm gonna download that. I listen to books when I run, so that'll be my next one on my list. I'll do my plugs right now. Follow me over at I Am Ralph Sutton. My other podcast on health and wellness is called Good Sugar Podcast. Comes out every Monday. We're opening up our first store on 3rd Avenue and 69th Street at the end of September. So it's all going to be vegan food, even though I'm not vegan, but it will have a very low imprint in terms of waste, everything. There's no single-use plastics, and it'll be on the corner of 3rd and 69th Street. Honestly, dude, thank you so much. We add a song every week to our playlist. I have to let Shannon pick the song because she is the mega fan here.
I have so many favorites. I feel like I would like it to be 3 a.m.
All right, we'll add 3 a.m. to the playlist. And too bad we can't add, you know, Shannon's hymn or whatever you end up calling the song that you write about Shannon in the next couple of weeks. You know?
Can I really? I didn't get to be a fangirl before. Can I just say really quickly? Just I'm gonna be very embarrassing, but I love you so much. I've seen you 8 times, which doesn't seem like a lot, but I only started going to concerts like 12 years ago. Every time that you're in the surrounding New York area, I go every single time. So I hope that you're coming back soon. The album Messenger was like the soundtrack of my entire senior year of high school. And I will still replay songs over and over and over again. And you're amazing. My friends don't enjoy the same type of music that I do. So I kind of like have to select a different one each time and be like, just try this out, come with me. And then every single time I've brought a friend to your concert, they cry because like there is something that emotionally gets them. So you're an amazing performer. The best.
By the way, if you weren't married, you could have asked her the Kevin Dubrow question that you said at the beginning and she probably would have said yes.
So I got this. This is one more story. So my favorite guy to meet backstage is the unwilling husband, right? I've literally, this dude right here will come to me. And this has happened so many times. It's the same archetype. He'll go, hey, man, can I holler at you for a second, man? Dude, I got to be honest with you. When she told me we were coming to this shit, I was dreading it all fucking week. I was like, God damn, I can't believe I got to go to this shit. But you were pretty good. You were really good. Like that's my favorite guy. That's the guy great. That literally was dreading it all week. Wife made him come, came, and then was like, you know what? You're pretty good. You're pretty good.
Do you have any New York dates on the horizon or you don't have any dates set about yet?
Not yet, but we'll be, I love playing the Bolton Center in Long Island. Like it's one of my favorite places. It's like this tiny little auditorium on Long Island. And it's, I had the record for playing there the most. And then I lost it to like the Coasters or somebody. Oh. I don't know.
There's a great venue. I think you might have played once on the west side of New York now called City Winery. Did you ever play that?
Oh, I play City. Yeah, I play all the City Wineries. And we used to play the Town Hall and the Bowery Ballroom and all the places. But, you know, God, the Wetlands when it was still up.
It was one of my favorite moments in my life. And we got to wrap this. I went to go see one of the few / Snake Pit solo. It was one of the last weeks Wetlands was open. And then I hung out and got drunk with Slash on his bus until like 4 a.m. What a great night that was for me. It was heaven. He was just telling Guns N' Roses stories for hours. It was awesome. All right, dude. Thank you so much. We will all come to your show when you come to New York. And now you and I are texting, buddy. So get ready for a whole ton of dick pics.
I can't wait.
All right, we'll see you next time on the SDR show.
And I'm awake and my heart still dreaming. It's 3 a.m. And outside I hear the souls still screaming. It's been so long, you know, since my head's been this clear. Like a ship lost in the night, I just don't know which way I should steer. But I keep chasing my dreams, and only you can make them real. And I pour my heart out every night. Do you sometimes this is work, And don't you know sometimes this is play? Cause sometimes you're listening to me, but sometimes you don't hear a damn word that I'll say. And sometimes there's a girl, and sometimes I'll go home alone. And I guess it's no wonder right now, and that'll do very well on my own. But I'll keep chasing my dreams, and only you can make it real. Now pour my heart out every night. And I will play just as long as you will listen. Oh, now I'm in no big hurry to get back on the road. Oh, sometimes in this lifestyle I feel like there's so much I'm missing, and when I'm missing you, it's just that I'm not so far from home. Yeah, whoa, it's 3 a.m. I'm awake in my heart, still dreaming. It's 3 a.m. Outside I hear the souls still screaming.
Listening to the SDR Show.